In the Square. It was David who had suggested that Anne accompany him on the trip. They could spend a couple of days together before his business meeting started, and then she could explore the city on her own. And the thought both excited and made her nervous, wondering what she would do if she got lost.
Ask someone. Everyone knows a little English, David assured her. Anyway, you'll be with me most of the time.
They spent the first morning in a market, wandering from stall to stall. It was summer, and the narrow passageways were packed with tourists laughing and talking in every language. There was so much that Anne wanted to buy. A copper kettle, brightly coloured scarves, leather sandals. David bought her an old gold ring, and she slipped it onto her finger in delight. But she was soon tired, and they went back to the hotel for lunch. In the afternoon, Anne lay on the bed and dozed, while David looked through company reports. The next day, they hired a car and drove up into the mountains. It was strange for Anne to be sitting with David on her left, and even stranger to see the bare dry landscape and the few stunted trees. They had lunch in an open-air restaurant overlooking the city and the bay. The English voices at the next table and the clean cutlery and plates reassured her that she wasn't too far from home. She had a headache, and though she was enjoying herself, she was glad that the holiday would only last a week. The noise in the city, or maybe it was the heat, made her ill. That evening she went to bed early while David had a drink in the bar with his new colleagues. Today she was alone, as David had gone to his first meeting.
You'll be all right, dear, won't you? He asked anxiously.
Of course, she told him. I won't go far. I'll be back here by lunchtime. But after he had left, Anne sat down on the bed and wondered whether it was wise to go out. She felt light-headed, as if she had a touch of flu, and the aspirin she had taken didn't seem to be working. But she couldn't stay in the hotel all morning. She did want to see the city and buy presents for herself and David. She picked up her bag, made sure she had her passport and purse, and went out, carefully locking the door behind her. The corridor was empty, which was somehow disturbing. But there was an American lady in the lift, who agreed with her that the city was just too hot and too noisy for anything but a short visit. On the ground floor, the receptionist smiled when Anne walked past. "Have a nice day," she said. "I will," Anne smiled, determined to explore the surrounding streets and enjoy herself. She walked leisurely along the street to the tree-lined square she had seen from their bedroom window. There were many shops, and she looked carefully in each window to see what she might buy. But the prices were in the local currency, and when she tried to work out in her head how much they were in pounds, they worked it either too much or too cheap. She was tired, and her headache was getting worse. All she wanted to do was sit down somewhere in the shade and relax. She looked down to the end of the street. The square seemed far, far away. Oh, it was hot, very hot. Everything was hazy and seemed out of focus. The traffic was loud, very loud. She stumbled and fell.
"Are you all right?"
someone asked in a strong accent, helping her to her feet.
Yes, thank you.
Her arm was being held by a middle-aged woman with sympathetic eyes. Two other passers-by had stopped and were watching her like curious birds. One said something to the other, but she didn't understand the words. "I'm going to the square," she told them. I must get to the square." She carefully detached herself from the woman's hand and steadied herself.
"Thank you.
That was very kind. I'm all right now.
Are you sure? The woman asked.
Yes, I'm fine now, Anne said, as much to reassure herself as the stranger. She could not go back to the hotel. She would not go back. What was the point of coming abroad and spending all day in your room?
The woman and the couple moved on. Anne looked for the square, saw it in the distance, and began to walk towards it. But each step was a trial. Her legs were sluggish, as if she was walking through soup. She told herself she should look at shop windows, pay attention to everything around her, but she was too tired to concentrate. Her only thought was to get to the square, to the shade. Here in the street it was hot, much too hot, but it would be cool under the trees. The square slowly came nearer. At last she came to the end of the street and stopped at the edge of the pavement. Cars and buses were rushing past, screeching and honking their horns.
"Can I help?" a voice beside her asked, an elderly man.
"Please, I want to get to the square," she spoke slowly and deliberately. "I have to get to the square."
"Then let me take you across the road."
"Thank you. That's very kind. I couldn't do it myself. It's too far."
He took hold of her arm and together they walked forward into the traffic. It seemed to Anne that the flood of cars dried up in front of them and began to flow again after they had passed. When they reached the opposite pavement, she let out a deep breath. She could not remember why she had to be there. But she was here, in the square, at last.
"Here we are, madame," people spoke in a funny way in this country.
"Thank you.
Where are you going?" the old man asked.
Anne looked around her, saw in front of her a large marble fountain with water splashing over statues and the flowers that they held. Children played nearby and people sat relaxing on benches under the trees.
"To the fountain," she said.
"Are you all right, madame?"
"Fine," she said.
It was a strange question. She really was fine. There was nothing wrong with her. It was the heat that was the problem. If she could only get out of the heat.
"Shall I leave you?"
"Of course. Thank you." She saw him walking away reluctantly, looking back at her now and again. Then she turned away and stepped forward cautiously to the fountain. She felt a little weak. There were noises around her that she didn't understand. Her eyes closed and opened, closed and opened, trying to drive away the heat. Hands were damp with perspiration. Her hands, they were empty. She had had a bag, a blue leather bag. It had gone. The old man must have taken it, or someone else. She had fallen, hadn't she? Not long ago. It must have been then. Oh, it was difficult to remember. She must sit down. And then she could think. At the fountain, she watched a small boy trying to climb into the pool.
A young woman rushed up and spoke to him sharply, and he burst into tears. As Anne watched him being led away, it came to her that she had never seen this thing, this large thing. What was it called? A fountain. She had never seen this fountain before, nor the trees. They were trees, weren't they? Nor the seats or tables of the outdoor cafe. Somehow these words came easier to her. She turned slowly round, carefully examining everything her eye could reach. She saw distinctly each tree, each patch of dusty grass, every car, bus, and lorry which sped round the square, but only vaguely recognized them. She was no longer certain she knew what these things were. Her surroundings were no longer familiar, but unknown, threatening, hostile. Suddenly, she was aware that she was surrounded by people. People sitting, standing, walking. People who were fat, thin, tall, short. They walked by, paying her no more attention than if she didn't exist. Where was she? What was she doing there? Why was she alone? Oh, she was afraid. Desperately afraid. She could remember nothing before this moment. She didn't even know who she was. She tried to concentrate, but her thoughts were no longer there. Dimly, she was aware of the heat pressing down on her head, stifling her breath and her lungs. She had to get out of the heat. Panicking, yet barely able to move, she stumbled to a nearby bench. Letting herself down, she leant forward with her head over her lap and gasped in relief. It was cool here. She could breathe. Gradually, her heart and lungs beat more steadily, and she sat up. The panic had gone, to be replaced by utter bewilderment. She no longer knew who she was, where she was, what she might or should do. Fear made her limbs weak and lifeless, her body unable to move. Her head, though, was held stiff and upright, as if it contained some part of her personality which could spill over and be lost in the dust at her feet. She wanted to cry, but there were no tears. She had forgotten how. I am here. I am here. The words echo in her head, but otherwise her mind is dark. She's like a blind rat in a maze, unable to see, not knowing where to go. Where is here? She asks herself, and it seems an awesome question, one so great that it cannot be answered. Who am I? And this too is beyond her. She knew once. She must have known once. But she has forgotten. forgotten. All she knows is that she is sitting here, alone, afraid. Around her, figures are moving. People, running, walking, sitting, standing. They are sure of themselves. They know who they are. As they pass, their mouths make noises, but all she hears is a chaos of sound. They can move, she understands, without thinking, with little effort. But she can't. She can't make the least movement without great concentration and determination. As an experiment, she tries to lift her hands into her lap. They move, reluctantly, but she almost panics at this forcing herself to act. To do more, to stand up and place one foot before the other would require much more effort than she could give. A shadow flits across her eyes and she's terrified to see a figure sit down beside her. Oh, he's so near that she could touch him by lifting an arm, or he could touch her. He isn't watching her, but he may look round at any instant. She can't help staring at him. Entranced. The thick black hair, dark skin and narrow mouth are all so strange and unfamiliar. He turns and sees her. He leans forward and says something. She doesn't hear, nor would she understand. She sees nothing but the movements of his mouth. It's so frightening that her head is reeling in pain. She wants to scream and her mouth is wide open, but no sound comes out. A long, silent scream. The man watches without understanding. He leans forward again, speaks, then hurriedly stands up and walks away, looking back once, nervously, before disappearing into the crowd. Slowly the terror subsides and she relaxes, weak and terrified. He didn't hurt her, but he might have done. She has to get away to find somewhere safe. She came from somewhere, didn't she? Not long ago. She must go back. There's someone she knows there, a man who'll look after her. Until then, she's lost and alone in this frightening place. She looks round nervously. The splashing water is pretty and the trees are thick and green, but there's a lot of noise from somewhere and strange metal things are flashing past beyond the trees. And there are all these people. They aren't watching her now, but at any moment they might turn and stare or come up to her. She must get away from here. Carefully she stands up. Oh, it isn't so difficult after all. She walks up to the fountain. The breeze blows drops of water against her face and arms. Oh, it's cool and refreshing. She looks around and the scene begins to make sense to her again. Behind the trees there are cars and buses. And beyond the cars and buses there are buildings. And between the buildings there are streets. She came from one of those streets, didn't she? There is safety in one of those streets. She is sure of it. Someone she knows in one of those buildings. Someone important who needs her. Who she needs. She walks slowly round the square, careful not to bump into anyone, not to look at them. One street seems familiar and she begins to walk towards it. Then she notices the trees and hanging from one of the branches a dusty coloured fruit. She reaches out. Her fingers embrace it, and suddenly it has fallen into her palm. She studies it carefully, remembering that she can pull off the skin and chew at the juicy interior. Not now. Later, when she's safe. The roadside is closer now. Cars rush past, loud and angry. She needs to get to the other side, but doesn't know how. There are others beside her. They seem to be waiting. Then that's what she must do. Wait. She stands with them on the edge of the road, holding on to the flute as if it were a promise, a guarantee that she will be safe soon. There's something at her feet, moving and making a noise. It's large and has fur, and its nose grazes her legs. It frightens her. She moves away. It follows her. She moves again. The animal begins a high-pitched yelp, yelp, yelp that does not stop, that drowns out the growls of the cars. She has to get away from it. Stop it, she cries. Stop it! Without knowing where the words come from, who she is speaking to. The dog comes closer. There is someone with it, talking to both her and the animal, but she doesn't know what is being said. She turns and sees faces watching her, and nobody helps her, and nobody moves, and there is only Anne and the dog, and someone with the dog, and she's alone and frightened, and she has to run, and she runs. And for a brief moment, she feels air on her face. And the car hits her, and for another brief moment, there is pain in her body. And then there is nothing. But the noise of cars and people shouting and gathering round the body of a young woman lying dead on the road, a wizened orange clasped tightly in her motionless hand. That was In the Square, read by Elizabeth McNally, written by Martin Foreman.
Arbury, drama and fiction. Hear more drama and fiction, old and new, on arburyproductions.co.uk.